this is going to be part of the fabric of our students' lives. And so we need to teach ourselves, and we need to open ourselves up to that education, and then to invite students to think through all of this together. There are so many benefits. I wrote the book Papers, 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 about really focusing on kids need descriptive feedback in the process of their writing more than evaluation at the end. What if artificial intelligence can actually provide that?
Hi, this is Edie. Welcome to The Dispatch, a Heinemann podcast series. Over the next several weeks, we'll hear from Heinemann thought leaders as they discuss the most pressing issues in education today. In today's episode, Heinemann author Carol Jago speaks to the resilience she sees in both teachers and students. Our conversation begins with her thoughts on the implications of AI.
I think the most pressing issue right now is artificial intelligence and how it's going to have an effect on every classroom, every student, every teacher in America. I think our challenge is to figure out how to capitalize on the benefits and mitigate the dangers, the harm. It seems to me, as I work with teachers in schools, that the first instinct was to ban it. It's not bannable. This is going to be part of the fabric of our students' lives. And so we need to teach ourselves, and we need to open ourselves up to that education, and then to invite students to think through all of this together. There are so many benefits. I wrote the book Papers, 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 about really focusing on kids need descriptive feedback in the process of their writing more than evaluation at the end. What if artificial intelligence can actually provide that? And there's research coming out that shows human feedback is a little bit better, but given the realities of a classroom with 36 students. So I think there are benefits, but we've got to be careful. This is dangerous territory.
Have you sort of brushed up against this and sort of started to figure it out a little bit or figure out your own thoughts on it?
I think that I've played with it is a lot.
Yeah.
And that the more you experiment yourself, the more you begin to understand what it can do.
Yeah.
This is not just a Google search.
Right.
This is a compilation, a synthesis, an analysis, if you will, of what's out there, which doesn't mean it always gets it right.
No.
I mean, I had a great experience asking it to write an analysis of a Robert Pinsky poem. And, of course, within 10 seconds, an essay came up that got it completely wrong. It said it was a conversation between a robot and a person. It wasn't a conversation. But what was interesting to me as a teacher, if I'd been handed that paper, I probably still would have given it like a B minus. You know, it sounded really smart. And I'd be kind. I'd be saying, well, they just got this little bit wrong. So it's questions like that I really am suggesting to English departments, you need to talk about this. You need to think through what it is that this tool, how can this tool help us? And how can we help our students not let the tool do the thinking for them?
Yes. Yeah, I know. I've actually been playing a little bit with it in my own work life, but I'll ask really specific questions just to get another opinion. Do you think this is a well-written passage? You know, not like writing the passage for me, but it, like you said, it's sort of that it's another level of feedback. So it's interesting, you know, like I'm just sort of starting to understand it in my own life as well.
Yes. And, you know, schools, English teachers are all worried about plagiarism.
Right.
And I actually think that's the least of our worries. I mean, it is a big worry.
Yeah.
But the much larger issue has to do what happens when we turn over thinking to a tool. And what happens to creativity mm-hmm. when we let this tool put together images and it does it beautifully. That's right. It is going to change the world that our children are growing up in.
So I'll pivot now to ask you, and I'm always excited to ask you this question. What are you reading? What are your influences right now? What's on your bookshelf?
I've recently read an extraordinary book. It's called A Man of Two Faces mm-hmm. by Viet Nam Nguyen, who won the Pulitzer Prize for his book, The Sympathizer. Remember that?
Yes,
about the Vietnamese spy. This is a memoir and a memorial. So it's his own experience as a refugee, but it's a memorial to his parents and to the lives they led and their sacrifices. You know how sometimes you find a book and you say, this is art. This is the real thing. He's funny. He's irreverent. It's utterly contemporary. I couldn't put it down. I first saw it at the library. Yes. I think I'd read a review. And then after I read it, I went and bought it. Like, mm-hmm. I need that book with me. And that doesn't happen all the time. I read a lot of books. I buy a lot of books, though I have a new, very important personal challenge, which is I can't bring another book into the house unless I give one away. And so fortunately, I live in a community with a lot of little libraries. So every day when I take a walk, there are eight of them within walking distance of my house.
Oh, do you mean like the little libraries?
That sit on people's front lawn, you know, on the parkway or on their front lawns. And so I take a bag of books and I use the criteria. Will you ever read this book again?
Oh, it's so hard, though. It's so still hard.
Oh, it's so hard. But my shelves are creaking. Yes. There is no more room to live. And I keep buying.
You relate to that.
Yes. So can't bring one in until I give one more away. Yeah. There are actually a lot of books of my husband's that I want to give away, but he won't let me go there yet.
I think that would be hilarious if you were giving his away and then getting more for yourself.
You know, every marriage makes it work.
Exactly, yeah. Are there any like voices in education specifically that you're following right now too, or reading that you're, I'd love to ask you about that additionally, if you don't mind.
I think Tricia Barvia's book, Get Free, mm-hmm. is a really, really powerful approach to thinking about our own biases as teachers. Mm-hmm. And it's also an incredible resource. She recommends as prompts to student writing so many great essays that, again, as I work with teachers in schools, not every teacher is reading Harper's and Atlantic every month. And here you have a curated list of really excellent first-rate essays to use.
Tell me a little bit about how you're working in education right now.
Right now, in terms of my own writing, I find I'm writing in response to things. So people ask me, oh, could you write a piece for this publication? Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting kind of writing on demand.
Yeah.
Then I also continue to edit California English, the quarterly journal of the California Teachers of English. And that means I have to be always thinking about what's the next issue. We just did an issue on artificial intelligence.
Yep.
And the next issue is on climate change. And you might not automatically think, but this is for English teachers. Yeah.
Right.
But these are the things that English teachers and their students are in their faces.
Right.
And so it's interesting that I get a lot of submissions for those on those issues.
And we grapple with how to make sense of complex issues through writing, through those practices.
With the climate change issue, I also am hoping to get a lot of manuscripts where teachers suggest books. You know, the heat will kill you first. You know, things like the nonfiction books that can be used in the classroom.
So my last question today, when you look across the spectrum of education, when you think about your own experiences, what gives you hope?
What gives me hope is the resilience that I see both in the profession and among students, to realize what students have been through with the pandemic break, the news that comes out every month about learning loss and how poor scores are. That can be devastating to individual students and to their teachers. But that's not what I see. There's a lot of weeping and gnashing of teeth at an administrative level. But what I see as I work in the schools and offer PD, I see teachers with endless hope and still looking for that perfect book for ninth grade boys and still willing to experiment, to try new things with their students, to be willing to talk to students. I was also very, very encouraged by a new book by Gay Ivey and Peter Johnson, which is research that they did following a group of eighth graders who weren't doing any reading. And then the teachers like just gave them time to read, free choice, and time to talk. And they followed these students through high school. And yes, their reading improved. They were reading more.
Yep.
But that wasn't even the most interesting finding. The most interesting finding is that the kids reported feeling better about themselves. They felt they were better human beings. They felt that they understood other perspectives better. I love research that supports what I already believe. So this, their study to me is such a confirmation of literature circles, reader circles, the importance of talk for comprehension and more. For how we how we want to construct this world. It's a really interesting insight, too, when they asked students about, well, you know, aren't you reading about, you know, dangerous things and kids hurting themselves or the rest? The kids laughed. I mean, they said, we don't use these stories as a guideline for our lives, but it helps them experience vicariously things that they're interested in, that they're worried about, and ultimately helps them to be better people. Isn't that what we want?
Thank you for tuning in today. For more information and a full transcript, please visit blog.heinemann.com.